When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to. Lots to talk about. The Iowa caucus yesterday came off as I think most people expected. Donald Trump came out on top. Not surprising. Anybody shocked? I think 53% was the lower end of what I was expecting. I thought he probably should have been near 60, given the fact that, you know, the hype, the free press, as radical as we're told Iowa's supposed to be. We'll see what brings us to Iowa. I mean, there's a lot to get to on this, but hey, and this was my favorite. There's a lot of crazy that's been going on in Iowa the last couple of weeks. The Trump camp, I don't know if people just aren't paying attention, if we're numb to the insanity. I'm really not sure, but I think my favorite story in all of this was lunatic fringe conspiracy theorist Laura Loomer, who, big Trump ally, big surrogate, who said that the weather, because it's cold. It's really cold in Iowa because it's Iowa. Don't know if you know, Iowa's a cold place in January. But evidently, Looney Laura said that it's because Nikki and her friends in the defense industry are using weather manipulation to make it cold in January in Iowa. Cold in January in Iowa through weather manipulation by the Defense Department for Nikki Haley against a former president. I mean, this is real deep state stuff here. And I love the fact that, you know, the victim thing, because nobody plays victims like conservatives, like red hats. I think it's in the dye. I think the dye gets into the brain, and I'm not really sure, but it's quite weird. And you know, the thing is, you know, I was watching some of the speeches, and I've been, you know, consuming some of the clips coming out of Iowa and some of Trump's speeches and some of the just the craziness. Like, did you know magnets don't work underwater? I evidently it's one of the things that Trump said, you know, recently, that, you know, magnets don't work underwater. You know, give me a glass of water. Let me drop it on the magnets. It's the end of the magnet. Really? I think you're thinking of something else. But no, that did not. Evidently, he bragged about putting on pants. That's something else that scratching of the head. I love the quip. First they say, sir, how do you do it? How do you wake up in the morning and put on your pants? He said, well, I don't think about it too much. And I don't want to think about it because if I think about it too much, maybe I won't want to do it. And the thing is people show up in the cold, in January, in Iowa, to hear this drivel. This is the stuff that blows my mind. People show up in January in Iowa to listen to this guy and listen to this kind of, and look, you know, the thing is I get it. It's all about mocking Biden, because he did that too. He mocked Biden's stutter. And would you expect nothing less from Trump than to mock people. He mocked Biden's stutter. He mocked John McCain's injuries because, you know, he was all upset that McCain didn't shoot down the Affordable Care Act because, well, you know, it's something about he couldn't raise his arm. You know, just mocking the guy. And my first thought is, you know, John McCain was a guy, no, he couldn't raise his arm because they broke his shoulders and all that. But there was a guy, even couldn't raise his arm, still would have whooped your behind. Probably even still now. And yes, I know he's passed a number of years. But you know, you stop and you think about this, the craziness that's come out of this guy and what's happened to our politics. He posted a video that asserted that, you know, that God made Trump. And I guess, you know, if you're a hyper-Christian, you know, God made everyone in his own image, except Donald Trump, who was special. And you know, you just go down the list of all this stuff. I mean, outside of bragging about putting on pants, at that point, don't you just walk away? Don't you just go, enough already? He bragged about his ability to negotiate. He could have negotiated us out of the Civil War. I'm like, really? That? He went on and, you know, he talked about the fact that he wants to free the insurrection, or not the insurrectionists, the hostages, the January 6th hostages. Got to free the hostages. You know, Joe Biden could free the hostages. And evidently a 17-year-old opened fire at a high school in Iowa, killed an 11-year-old and injured 4 students and 3 staff members before he killed himself. And Trump said, surprised to see something like that happen in Iowa, but people just need to find a way to get over it. You just got to get over it. Yeah, just kind of got to get over it. And 53% of people went to the polls and voted for this kind of insanity. Said, yeah, this is what we want for 4 years in the White House. And look, there was a ton of other stuff that just blew my mind. The quote about, I hope the economy collapses, just, you know, really? And I know no one's really paying attention to anything he says anymore because we've all become kind of numb to the craziness. We've all become kind of numb to the shock value. It's no longer, there's no longer shock anymore. Like the first time you heard him swear, a politician swore, that never happened before, but there he is using all the colorful language of George Carlin's 7 words you can't say on TV or anywhere else in polite conversation. And that got him a rousing cheer. But what's it done for our discourse? What's it done for our policy? What's it done for our ability to move this country in the right direction? How's it hardened and coarsened our politics? We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Iowa State Representative J.D. Scholten is going to be here to talk about what happened to Iowa. And is it the Trump effect that's done this, or is it something worse? Quick break, right back after this. Stick around. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1865. That was the day General William T. Sherman issued Field Order No. 15. The order sought to redistribute 400,000 acres of land to freed blacks in 40-acre tracts. The area stretched from Charleston, South Carolina to Jacksonville, Florida, from the Atlantic Ocean to 30 miles inland. It also included many coastal islands, as well as Georgia's Sea Islands. Coming on the heels of Sherman's march to the sea, the order was issued from Savannah, Georgia. 4 days earlier, Sherman had met with 20 black ministers and the Secretary of War, Edwin Stanton. Sherman and Stanton asked the group a series of questions. How did they understand slavery, and what did freedom mean to them? When asked what the freedmen wanted most, Garrison Frazier, the group spokesman, replied land. And when asked whether they would prefer to live among whites or not, they replied no, as the prejudice of whites would take years to overcome. The order provided for the immediate settlement of black refugees on confiscated land. Land redistribution to former slaves was radical policy to break the economic power of the Confederacy, punish South Carolina for starting the war, and begin to consolidate a new class of agricultural laborers. The land titles were possessory, however, and contingent upon the Freedmen's Bureau to award permanent titles. President Andrew Johnson moved quickly in the wake of Lincoln's assassination to overturn Field Order No. 15. Within a year, it would be reversed and confiscated lands would be returned to newly pardoned Confederates and plantation owners. The overturning of the order and later of Reconstruction would lay the basis for a new type of slavery, that of sharecropping, debt peonage, and contract labor. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So the other day, there was an article over at the Washington Post that caught my attention. Thought it was kind of interesting. It said, and I quote, "Trump has helped transform Iowa from a swing state into a GOP stronghold. He carried the state by more than 8 points in 2020, a 14-point swing since former President Barack Obama won it in 2012. No other state has shifted as hard towards Republicans in the same period." And that's all true. I don't know that I give Donald Trump that much credit. Sorry, I just don't know that I'm giving him all of that credit. I'm here to share some thoughts on, maybe I'm wrong. I've been to Iowa a couple of times. Maybe there's something I'm missing. But the last time I was there, my good friend J.D. Scholten showed me around and had some interesting thoughts. That's why I've asked Iowa State Representative J.D. Scholten to come back and share some thoughts with us. J.D., thanks for taking time for us.
Yeah, good to be back. Thanks for the invite.
So you buying this? Donald Trump did this. Donald Trump made Iowa this extreme kind of Republican state now.
I think that's an oversimplification. I think there's one county in particular that I love to talk about, that what we've seen, that voted for Obama in 2008 and 2012 and 2020 voted for Trump at almost 70%. And to me, that shift is just like that county exemplifies what happened. And what we saw is there's no elected Democrats in that county. Talk radio has gotten more radical. It used to be just AP News, and now it's 10 hours of right-wing propaganda a day. And then you also, the other component is the mis and disinformation on Facebook. Iowa voters are disproportionately more than anybody else in the country, or as much as anybody else, on Facebook. And you add those things up together, and then you bring in a candidate like Trump and saw the shift. That's more or less everything.
And you add a lot of the hardship that has gone on over the last couple of decades. And this is what we talked about as we were going through Iowa and talking to people. The standard of living has been in decline. Deindustrialization has hit communities extraordinarily hard, especially in a state like Iowa that was a make it kind of state, a state that had, communities that were proud to be, a factory town, and to have that identity ripped away. I think that has more to do with it than everything else. The fact that their identity has been taken away.
I don't think there's another state that trickle-down economics has just shown how useless it is as it is in Iowa, especially my neck of the woods, Northwest Iowa. We're an agriculture state. Sioux City, where I live, we're an immigrant meatpacking town since the 1880s. And we see all these CEOs getting record salaries. We have the companies bragging about record profits. And what the salaries of the workers, the men and women who are working in these meatpacking plants before COVID, they're at about $17, which was the big try to draw to get folks in. Now they're up to $24 post COVID. And, that's for every $50,000 at one of these plants. I was told by a city councilwoman, for every $50,000 employee, so that's salary and benefits and all that, the plant gets $800,000 of production out of that employee.
Wow.
Yeah, and you tell me that's right? Like that, and we feel that here, And so did Trump capitalize on that? Yeah, but at the same time, like a huge part of the Obama excitement and everything was that change. And then when it didn't change the lives that we were hoping for, that's what we saw the backlash in Word of Trumpism. So to me, what I see is a huge potential movement, especially in the working class, about, and you see it in the strikes happening, the UAW strikes and other strikes happening all throughout the country, and especially here in Iowa. I think there's especially a post-Trump kind of revitalization, and I hope the Democrats are up for it. I'm doing everything I can to be there, to be there at that moment, to meet the people where they're at, because I think it's about to happen.
And this is why I think what Joe Biden is doing is so important. You know, I've been saying for a while, the thing that I'm thrilled about is his move away from neoliberalism, the fact that we're reshoring manufacturing, the fact that he's you know, everything he does, executive order wise, policy wise, is encouraging people to join and form unions, ensuring that workers get a fair cut of the work that's being done, kind of, you know, hearkening back to, you know, my grandparents' generation. Ensuring that wages are sufficient to support families, and part of that, I think, is what you're talking about. And I would like them to do more talking about that, more focusing on rebuilding that prosperity of work and a prosperous working class of the past.
Well, when I go down to my local bar, shout out to Prince's, you know, great conversations. And, you know, it's a split. I get a lot of Republicans there, a lot of Democrats there. And when I talk to a lot of the Republicans, like when we do our deep dives, I'll talk for 20 minutes on how corporations are screwing us over. And after that, I go, well, this is exactly why I think Joe Biden's the best president in my lifetime. And they look at me in this shock and are kind of like, what the heck are you talking about? I go, he's the only president in my lifetime that has taken on competition with his executive order. He's put Lina Khan as the FTC chair. He's put Jonathan Cantor as the head of the DOJ for the antitrust division. And Tim Wu was part of the economic council at the beginning. All these pieces have led up to this moment. And do I want them to continue to go further and way further? Absolutely. But this is the first step. And so you see the comparison between Trump. What did Trump do? He gave tax cuts to the super wealthy. There's nothing more perfectly set than and perfectly put that the Republicans did. They gave permanent tax cuts to the corporations and the super wealthy, and they gave working class people temporary tax cuts.
Yeah.
That's it. You know, that's the sentence right there.
That should be the mic drop moment. That should be the moment you go, we know everything you're about. But here's the thing. You know, they talk about deregulation as well. Who does deregulation help? It doesn't help you or me. It helps corporate profits. It doesn't trickle down in higher wages or more jobs. What trickles down is less safe working conditions, less safe environmental conditions, less safe places of employment. This is the part that we don't get to hear enough of.
Right, and that's, I mean, food safety is even an issue because these corporations have so much power and the additives and everything. I'll say this right now, the rural America right now, and it goes beyond rural America because they create the food that we eat. There's the rural economy, the food we eat, and our political system are unhealthy and they're unsustainable.
Right.
And that's where we're at right now. We need change.
We absolutely do. And and I think you're right that, you know, Trump was that backlash to change. And this is why I said in 2016, had Bernie Sanders been the nominee for the Democrats, I think Sanders would have won hands down. But, you know, here's the thing. I'm concerned that a lot of people think that once Trump is gone, all of the problems that are facing the country are going to be gone too. And I think that's wrong because I think the Republican Party has gone completely off the deep end. I think the party as a whole right now gets worse. They're still going to be, like in your state, the Republicans attacking public education, attacking, you know, education funding, you know, attacking child labor laws. I mean, did you see the bill in Indiana that's moving?
Yeah.
They want to let children, if you finish eighth grade, you can quit school if you're 14, go work on that factory farm. How insane is that?
And the bill that was here in Iowa last year where they allowed 14-year-old girls to work at bars until 11 p.m., like, just insane and unsafe. Like, just common sense. What the heck are we doing here? You know, and it's the frustrating thing for me is being a state legislator and working with my colleagues. I don't know where the line is, because like some of the things they're proposing, like our state corridor is foundation in education. And yet just this week alone, the director of the Department of Education is checking with 8 charter schools and 7 of them are from out of state that they want to put public money and they're going to either Cedar Rapids or Des Moines. So all these rural taxes, you know, are funneling to private schools that will be only in Cedar Rapids and Des Moines.
So let me and ask yet, you this.
Yet they get reelected right now. And so that's why I think 2024 is such our backs against the wall for Democrats here in Iowa.
So isn't this a moment for Democrats in Iowa to go in those rural communities and go, hey, they're literally stealing your public schools. They're stealing your local schools. Is there no, I mean, in my rural community, the local school, that's the center. That's
oh, everything.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But here's one of the other problems is because all eyes are on Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Georgia, like those states, and we lost the caucuses. There's not the national funding coming into this state. We're doing everything we can on our own, but like there's also like the national narrative, and like the national narrative is kind of what got us here in the first place. And so it's been tough, and like I'm one of only 2 Democrats in the entire western half of the state, and I'm the only one in Northwest Iowa. So for all my pre-legislative meetings and everything that I've had to endure the past month or so, I'm one of probably 10 in the room and I'm the only Democrat. And if I wasn't there, the Democratic message doesn't come out. And that's it weighs on you too. And so, you know, we're fighting tooth and nail out here, but it's just we're doing the best we can. I'll say that, or I'm at least I am.
No, this is the thing that worries me, because Liz Cheney the other day said that, you know, once the cult of personality goes away, and I alluded to this a moment ago, once Trump and the cult of personality goes away, we can get back to fighting on conservative principles and values. And I'm looking at what passed for today's conservative principles and values, and I got to tell you, it's frightening. To be honest, it's what got us into the mess that we're in right now. You know, conservative economics, you know, supply side voodoo Reaganomics is the reason we are where we are. It's the reason wages have been stagnant for 40, 50 years. It's the reason we've had deindustrialization. It's the reason we've had all of the problems that we've had over these last several decades. And I don't see that it's going to help going forward.
Absolutely. And I was at a Farm Bureau event, and they are as far away from Democrats as possible right now. It was great talking to the farmers, because they all get it. In fact, one farmer who I know is Republican, very strong Republican, he was blaming Reagan for a lot of the concentration issues that we were talking about at the meeting. You know, we had a fertilizer plant that the state of Iowa invested $100 million in on the other side of the state, and with local tax breaks and federal tax breaks, this company got over $500 million of breaks to create a plant on the other side of the state, because the big companies like Coke, which owns, there's 4 companies that control 75% of the marketplace in this type of fertilizer, nitrogen fertilizer. And the reason why they wanted to start this company is because the big 4 were pricing out our farmers. So they started it, gave all this money to, well, just last month, Coke bought them out for $3 billion after about 4 or 5 years of being in production. And there's nothing more that says what's happening. And that was all Republican doing. And just, that's it. You know, you try to create a solution, and when you deregulate it so anything can happen, and then all of a sudden the thing that you were creating to stop happens.
You know, I was just having a conversation with somebody the other day about that, just that. I said, look, you know, the reality is, you know, when we were younger, you know, we owned our own parking lots. We didn't privatize the parking authority. We didn't privatize prisons. We didn't privatize water and sewer. We didn't privatize, the turnpikes. You know, go down the list, of all of the things that over the last 30, 40 years that we've privatized and profitized. And we're told that we were going to get better, cheaper services. And what turned out to be, it ended up costing us much more. We got crummier services. And in the end, we ended up spending more when we got it back because we had to fix all of it again because they ran it into the ground for short-term profit and short-term gain. And we ended up holding the bag again and again and again. And we've seen this movie over and over, and yet we still keep doing it. And yet we keep electing people who keep pushing this poison.
And what we're seeing, we're seeing it here in Iowa for sure, but it's across the nation, nursing homes.
Yeah.
Privatization, we had an awful, awful situation, which I'm not going to repeat on here, but it was a situation where an elderly lady gets sexually assaulted and then gets evicted and sent to a homeless shelter. She did nothing wrong. Just awful situation. Iowa is second to last in inspectors per nursing homes in the country. And we privatized the inspection. It's just absolutely just ridiculous. What are we doing here? Yeah. What are we doing?
Well, because they're going to police themselves. They're going to police themselves. They're going to do what's in their best interests. And they are. They're gonna cover. So last question I've got: is there a way forward? Yeah. And is 2024 the answer going to help move us forward? Thoughts?
I am, like I said, I am convinced there's a potential for a massive, massive movement. And so I think I'm not a predictor. I'm not anything like that. But that is what I'm working on. I don't know where the line's going to cross, where it's going to happen. But what I'm preparing for is 2026, 2028. I think there's going to be a massive movement here in the U.S. because we are living in the second gilded age. It's the haves and the haves not, and the haves are getting more and the rest of us are getting left behind. And so do we need Democrats to figure out the message on this and to start broadening the spectrum of who we target when we try to get voters? Absolutely. Because you look at the Senate's set. We can complain all we want that 30% of the country or the population, 70% of the population is in 15 states. So that means 70% of the Senate is only 30% of the population. So we're not expanding there. So we have to do better in states like Iowa. And so that is what I'm so passionate about is making sure that we continue to fight and that the state of Iowa bounces back to being a proudly purple state.
I'm right there with you. One of my favorite people, Tom Harkin, was a senator from Iowa for years. I would love to see someone like Senator Harkin back in the Senate from Iowa, other than the two crazy people you've got right now. But JD, I appreciate the time. Would be great to see JD Shulton in the Senate someday. But JD, appreciate the time. Always good talking
to you. Thanks, Rick. Have a great night.
JD Shulton, I want to hear your thoughts. What's it going to take? What's it going to take to move us back in a direction where we... I don't know. Come somewhere near the same line. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Want to hear your thoughts. For those of you watching on our Free Speech TV show, thanks so much for tuning in. We'll see you back here next time. Everyone on the radio affiliates, we'll take a quick break back after this. For everyone, if you miss any portion of the program, always grab the podcast. You can find that at thericksmithshow.com.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, quite an interesting quote from Ted Cruz, of all people. As winter is upon us and the cold and the freezing, because it does get cold in Texas, Ted Cruz decided that was a good idea to tweet out to his fellow Texans, Texans, with the freeze coming, wrap your pipes, cover your plants, stay off icy roads, and keep your family safe. And if it gets too damn cold, join me in Cancun. He tweeted it out. And again, this is one of those things that I say about Republicans all the time, that when they screw up, they lean into it. They go right through it. Democrats would be apologizing forever over this. But Republicans, no. Yeah, we let our constituents freeze to death. remember when we let them freeze to death? Oh, that was funny. Yeah, it was funny how we did that. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on, letting them freeze to death. I've asked our good friend Bob Ney, former Ohio congressman, political analyst, to come share some thoughts. What do you think, Bob? Funny joke or just in bad taste? Or worse?
Well, both. But if I was Ted Cruz by, sometime tomorrow, I would be saying my account was hacked. I need to find out who hacked my account. I would blame somebody.
See, but I say this all the time about the current batch of Republicans. They never back up. They never apologize. Well, they never admit when they're wrong. And when they do screw up, they normalize it. This is the Trump GOP, man. This is exactly what they do.
Well, in 2016, I kept, as when I was working for Ellen Ratner, I kept saying that Trump was going to win the primary, Jeb Bush was going to drop out. People said, you're crazy. Karl Rove's got Jeb Bush in there. It's all done. Look at the things Trump said. John Kasich at that time was kind of playing Mr. Rogers. He's not really Mr. Rogers in person, but he was playing Mr. Rogers. And I could see where Trump, by not backing down, no matter what, and you could play a video. You just said this. No, I said something beautiful, So no matter what he did, he didn't back down. He started something, because in the old days, you back off and then the media comes after you and then you have to make another statement and they come after you. Trump normalized ignoring the answer.
Yeah.
He normalized it, no doubt.
It's quite
remarkable. Ted Cruz can't get away with it. He can't get away with it.
I sure hope not. But it's interesting, though, with yesterday being the Iowa caucus and Ted Cruz having won the 2016 Iowa caucus, right, that Trump conveniently forgot. I mean, he said he won two consecutive Iowa caucuses and this was going to be his third, forgot 2016. But yep, the faithful out there in Iowa braved the cold that I guess Ted Cruz, doesn't care about Texans, but went out and they went and they voted for Trump.
Right. Yeah, he took the caucus. He should have taken it. I'm thinking, if I was one of his campaign people, he should have taken it by a larger margin, more towards 60%, because he's Donald Trump. Now,
right. Again,
he will normalize 53% as a big win because, after all, 91 indictments, everything that's happened. Okay, it is technically a good win, but for Donald Trump, he would like to have been at the 60% point, no question about it.
And he should have been. I mean, I think the goal for him was the bar for him. And right? I don't see this as a huge victory for him. I see this as he got by. He got out of this. He got out of this first block. We'll see what happens in New Hampshire.
Now, DeSantis and Haley were close. I kind of predicted that wrong. I thought Haley would beat him. It's close. She's 2 points off, but I thought she would beat him in particular because she had the Koch brothers' money to start her ground game. And if you look at the history of the Iowa caucus, it's kind of interesting. Even though money was spent there, not necessarily a money spending game. Iowa caucus is a ground game. And so I thought with Haley, with all the Koch brothers' infusion, I still call them Koch brothers as one, but I call them Koch brothers, with all the infusion of the money, I thought, okay, she'd come out a little bit ahead, but she's close enough to keep alive in this. Obviously, Vivek Ramaswamy has some problems at 7%. Right. But delegates four, you got four for DeSantis and four for Haley. So they're alive.
They're still alive. And again, like you, I thought Haley would have beaten DeSantis because DeSantis is just bad at this. I mean, you're watching him campaign in Iowa and be around old people was just painful to watch. It was painful to watch for him at how bad he is at this. But you said it's not about money. It kind of was about money. This was the most expensive Iowa caucus on record. Over $120 million spent on ads by the campaigns and their affiliates.
$120 million. Yeah, they spent money because I saw the articles, but it's still, I think the ground game is probably, you know, what activated Haley into a position where she was at least close because about a month or so ago, she was not doing as well. And then the Koch brothers' money, you know, came into play in it. But, you know, you mentioned something interesting with DeSantis, painful to watch. I watched him during the Republican debate. Same thought I had, painful to watch. During the primary in 2016, I purposely, and I told people, I did it, I know, on your show, and I told people, turn the sound down and watch Jeb Bush. It was like Karl Rove was standing there saying, don't you get off that stage. You know, you're on that stage. No, Jeb. And DeSantis has the same thing. When Haley was hitting back at him during the debate, he was going like this. He would do this and, you know, and move. And a sure sign he is not comfortable, not only in his own skin, he's not comfortable being around anybody else in their skin.
No, it's an interesting field we've got going. I still say there's no way to stop Trump. I know a bunch of people are hopeful that New Hampshire is going to be where Nikki Haley's able to mount the last stand and derail. I don't see it, but here's the thing. Scaramucci to the rescue, Bob.
It's done.
Anthony Scaramucci says he's going to come out and he's going to campaign for President Biden because he says that he is a patriot first. He says a partisan second. This is a battle, Scaramucci says, for American democracy, a battle for freedom. And he says when someone's telling you that they're going to go to the flex and be a dictator on day one and go after their adversaries, this goes against 200 plus years of the experiment of America. And he's going to be out there stumping for Joe Biden. You think Biden's going to want Scaramucci out there?
Well, the mooch is, he's not the deep state, because people will say this is a deep state plot, you know, and they're trying to get Trump. He's not. It's more likely that somebody in the Trump campaign is taking him to Cancun after the election. You know, hey, go campaign for Biden. It'll help Trump. So it's more likely, not that that's actually happening, but my speculation is more likely that Mooch is going to get a trip, maybe the same trip Ted Cruz takes to Cancun. That's possible for trying to hurt Biden. I mean, look, I got in trouble with the lobbyist Jack Abramoff. If I ran again, it would be like Abramoff raising my money, doing my fundraisers. Okay? Same thing.
That would be funny. But here's the thing. You know, with Scaramucci coming out and saying something bad about Trump, all of the best people that Trump hired, because remember, he only was going to surround himself with the best people. All the best people are coming out and saying, this guy's bad. This guy's terrible. This guy was no good. This guy's all about himself. You got Pence saying anyone who would put himself over the Constitution should never be president, and Trump made him choose between him and the Constitution. You got Jim Mattis, former one of his defense secretaries, saying Donald Trump is the first person in my lifetime who doesn't try to unite the American people, doesn't even pretend to try. Instead, he tries to divide us. He is more dangerous than anyone could ever imagine. You got John Kelly, one of his chiefs of staff, saying a person that has no idea that what America stands for and no idea what America is about, a person who admires autocrats and murderous dictators, a person who has nothing but contempt for our democratic institutions, our Constitution, our rule of law. You could go down the list, Second Attorney Bill Barr. He's a consummate narcissist, and he constantly engages in reckless conduct. He always puts his own interest and gratifies his own ego ahead of everything else, including the country's interest. I could go on for an hour of the very best
I want to add one, because he's my favorite villain, John Bolton.
There it is. I got
he's been my favorite ever since he met with me in my office. And I gave a Shakespeare quote when he left. Somebody said, how was the meeting? I said, when I feel the twitching in my thumbs, something wicked this way comes. So John Bolton, remember, who was masterminding how we were going to really take control of Iran, et cetera. Even Bolton doesn't like him.
Yeah. No, Bolton said that I've been in the rooms with him when he met with the world leaders. I believe they think he's a laughing fool. And the idea that somehow his presence in office would have deterred Putin is flatly wrong. He's not fit to be president. The list goes on and on of the so-called very best people. And yet the red hat folks in the caucuses, of which 4 out of the 10 people who braved the cold yesterday, they knew that's their guy.
Right. 91 indictments. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. But again, Haley and DeSantis are keeping their campaigns alive to position themselves just in case, because things have happened, as you know, you've been in this business for years. Things have happened that we couldn't have wrote a script on. Things have happened that are surreal in the political system. So
I'm going to say something. I'm going to say something that I'm going to get tons of email on, and let it fly. Let the angry email fly. I want Trump to be the nominee. I don't want Nikki Haley. Certainly don't want Nikki Haley.
If it's Nikki Haley, there's no question that if it's Nikki Haley, the thing could be over with if it's Nikki Haley. It's a fresh start, etc. I argue that if Biden would happen to leave, would step out, then I argue Trump is finished. That's the only way I argue.
I'm right there with you.
Now, Trump people would be mad at me for that.
No. Last line of questioning I've got for you. And this is one of those things that you go, I can't believe he said it, but Donald Trump says he may be president for more than 4 years. He said 4 years and beyond, Bob. He's got work to do for 4 years and beyond, which... was that a slip of the tongue of, oops, I made a mistake? Or was that a slip of the tongue of, I'm not leaving?
No, it's getting age eventually gets everybody, but it's getting the crowd stirred up. They know he can't do it. Although, I guess that would be instant constitutional convention, maybe? Instant state changes, which is not going to happen. Now, he's throwing that out there to get a headline. Or... he's just going to decide to stay, and you can't remove him from the White House.
So the question that I have on this, and the reason I brought this up, because we agree on that. Do the red hats agree? Do you see the red hats start going, well, maybe we do want him for a third term. Maybe that two-term thing is antiquated and old, and we need to renew because we need our guy.
Well, look, it will give the red hats the ability to form groups, raise money, let's change the Constitution. Doesn't matter if they do or don't. It would give them something to do for 4 years.
Right.
I mean, seriously, some people would think, hey, we can raise money, we can change this, the movement will be there. Sure, it gives them an idea that there's some hope. So keeps them busy for 4 years.
We
absolutely.
Should, we should start a group.
Raises money. Raise it. Well, yeah, we could. Well, we could start several groups, you know, either against that or the secondary backup group. I don't know. And then raise money.
There you go. That seems to be what it's about. But Bob, I appreciate the time. As always, great stuff, my friend. Thanks so much for taking time for us.
Thank you so much, Rick. Thank you.
Our good friend Bob Nabe. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You'll listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1942. That was the day that President Franklin Delano Roosevelt reestablished the National War Labor Board, just a little over a month before the United States had entered World War II. In the days after the attack on Pearl Harbor, Congress voted to join the global conflict. Soon after the war was declared, the president brought together representatives from both business and labor. The president won commitments of no strikes or lockouts during the conflict. He wanted further assurances, however, that the great industrial war machine would continue to run smoothly. He looked back on how labor disputes were handled during World War I as a model. During that earlier global conflict, President Woodrow Wilson had set up a National War Labor Board. President Roosevelt kept the same name for his board, but charged it with even more sweeping powers. The board consisted of 12 members, 4 from labor, 4 from business, and 4 from the general public. But the overall composition of those selected tilted in favor of business. Any labor dispute that might impact the war effort was sent before the board. Since practically the entire United States economy was part of the war engine, this gave the group significant power. In establishing the board, President Roosevelt declared, "The national interest demands that there shall be no interruptions of any work which contributes to the effective prosecution of the war." The board played a decisive role in setting wages for many workers during the war. Labor protested the hardship of stagnant wages, as the raises determined by the board did not keep up with the cost of living, as prices were driven up by wartime scarcities. Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. So look, you know, I go back to this very best people thing, you know, because you remember Trump told us he was only going to surround himself with the best minds, the best talent, the people who are going to make America great. And he went and grabbed a bunch of ideologues and a bunch of, you know, right-wing think tank folks. And some retreads from other administrations. And to be honest, these are folks who, they're career folks. They understand the workings of government. They understand the workings of institutions. And they saw this guy for what he was. This flaming narcissist who it was all about him. And I've had numerous conversations over the years with people who go, no, Donald Trump loves America. It's all about America. You know, he has put his whole business, his whole life, everything's about the country. No. Everything's about him. The country's success is about him getting credit for it. That's all that matters. And I think the quote from a couple of days ago, you know, where he said, I hope the recession, I hope, you know, major collapse, and, you know, because I don't want to look like Herbert Hoover. I hope it happens under Biden. And he's hoping for economic pain for working people. He's hoping for a disaster for working people. Millions of people to lose their jobs, lose their homes, lose their savings, you know, not be able to put food on the table, keep a roof over their head, kids not to be able to go to college, families not to have health insurance, and if someone gets sick, sorry, you're going to not make it. I mean, listen to the words that come out of his mouth. So I go and I listen to the very best people. You know, like James Mathis saying, look, this is the first president of my lifetime who doesn't try and unite the country, does not even pretend to try. He divides us. He tears us apart. He is dangerous. He's more dangerous than anyone could ever imagine. John Kelly saying he's got no idea what this country stands for. He admires autocrats and murderous dictators. Bill Barr saying he's the consummate narcissist. It's all about his gratifying his own ego. It's all about the id. He's the consummate id. McMaster, Lieutenant General H.R. McMaster, one of his national security advisors. President Trump and other officials have repeatedly compromised our principles in pursuit of partisan advantage and personal gain. Again, but Rick, it's all about because he loves the country so much. No, it's all about how much coin he can put in his pocket, how much love and adoration he can put into his own world. Mark Esper, the former defense secretary, Donald Trump, he puts himself before country. His actions are all about him and not about the country. That pretty much sums it up. And yet, yesterday he won the Iowa caucus. He convinced a bunch of farmers and a bunch of Iowans that, yep, he's the guy. He's our guy. A guy who it's all about him. And, you know, I had an acquaintance years ago who used to be a lawyer for the USFL. Years and years ago, that spring football league that sprung up back in the 80s, of which Trump was one of the co-owners of, I think it was the New Jersey Generals. And this guy told me this story of how Trump basically came into a meeting after, you know, they were hammering out an agreement for hours, just, you know, negotiating and just hammering stuff out. Trump came in, was Mr. Art of the Deal, came in and within, you know, like 20 minutes blew the whole thing up and basically gave away everything that the union wanted and basically set the owners back, you know to square one. And ultimately what did, you know, this guy said, look, you know, what he did is he put the league in jeopardy because it was about him. He was going to come in and make the deal. He was going to be the knight in shining armor. He was going to be the one. He knew better. He knew nothing about football. He knew nothing about running a league. He knew nothing about anything. He was just a guy who, he's a wheeler and a dealer. He's a gambler. And as this guy tells the story, ultimately what he gave away and what he did ultimately helped bring the league down. Outside of the fact that it didn't have the viewer base and the TV contracts and all the stuff to hold it up. But I've heard that kind of story over and over and over again. That it's all about him and it's all about his ego. And look, that's not somebody you want running the country. That's not somebody that you want trying to solve problems. Trump is not a problem solver. He's a problem creator. Look at what he does on the stump. Look at the kind of rhetoric that he uses on the stump. It's not inclusive. It's not bringing us together. It's not saying, hey, this is how we're going to get better lives. No, it's about tearing each other apart. And look, I like good locker room rhetoric like anybody else. I like good, hey, let's take them out. I like anybody else. It's good. That's fun. Yeah. It's not how you lead. It's not how you move a country forward. And in the 4 years that he was president, sorry, I know we like to think there were good times, but if you stop and think about it, he took over an economy that was growing and doing really well. Thank you, Barack Obama. And then, remember, he's responsible for 25% of our debt. He, in 4 years, is responsible for a quarter of our $34 trillion debt. If you give me the ability to spend $8 trillion, I will get you a heated up economy. if you give me the ability to spend that kind of money, I will get you a heated up economy. And the thing that gets me is most people are, you know, this is Bidenflation. No, a lot of this inflation, thank you, Donald Trump. Joe Biden gave away $600. Or was it 14? It was 1400. Joe Biden gave away $1,400 because it was the 600 that he didn't give. It was supposed to be $2,000. That's right. The 600 came from Trump, if you remember, right before the election, because he was trying to buy the election and buy votes, if you remember right. No, we can't talk about that, Rick. No. I know history. Don't do that. But here's the thing, and this is where I gotta wrap this into. When you got Scaramucci, who, look, Biden is not going to put Anthony Scaramucci out on the campaign trail as his surrogate. It's not going to happen. But Scaramucci going out there and saying, look, I'm going to stand for democracy. I'm going to stand for what this country stands for over Donald Trump is kind of a big deal. Because for 15 minutes, he was their comms guy? Maybe 15 minutes? But he was one of the very best people. He was a true believer. He was there. And he's now saying this guy's bad for democracy. This guy's bad for the country. I think that's important. The question is will the faithful care? Will it matter? And in this 11th hour, as we move down the road towards the nomination, is this something that Nikki Haley can use or Ron DeSantis? And look, you know, I don't want Nikki Haley, maybe DeSantis, because I think he's just bad at this. But I think as a country, we have to push back against Trumpism. But beyond Trumpism, Republicanism, the current Republican Party is a problem. And that is something that has to be dealt with. And I don't know that we're there. I think it's still the cult of Trump's personality. I think it's still the shock of his rhetoric. Because look, in my lifetime, no politicians talk like that. No politician has used that kind of rhetoric, that kind of fiery rhetoric, that flaming rhetoric. Nobody's done that. Nobody's jumped in the middle of all of that. I mean, it's really quite disturbing, because we're not talking about real issues, are we? We're just not. But I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. If you miss any portion of the program, make sure you download the podcast. Wherever you get your favorite podcast, you'll find ours. I got to tell you, yeah, not a big surprise with what happened in Iowa. Not a big surprise at all. But I'll tell you, I thought he'd hit 60. 53, I don't know, is a big victory. I don't know that that's enough to for the coronation. But it's still a victory nonetheless. Anyway, want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Email Rick at rick@thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.